Hey guys, Lady Luck here. I just love the fall season. Crisp mornings, pumpkin spice latte, and it's the best time to cozy up and play Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 different slots in all my favorite casino-style games. And they're running a deal for all new players, a $30 coin package for just 10 bucks. So this fall, grab your favorite blanket, visit spinquest.com, and download the app today.
Spin Quest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. Presented by Green Ventures Landscaping, outdoor patios, landscaping design, lawn maintenance, and more. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We'll be joined by John Adams from the Knoxville News Sentinel at 7:30. We'll get into Tennessee and Georgia Tech with him. Charles Robinson from NFLBlueBook.com with us at 8 o'clock, looking ahead to week one for the Titans and week one around the National Football League. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up later this hour. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and the Jets, Joe, PK put together an interesting piece at PaulKuharsky.com. Basically, kind of looking through, you know, his 30 years says series and looking through Cam Ward and how he measures up the Titans quarterbacks of the past entering into year two. And it's a really interesting kind of exercise when you look at it and going through, you know, Vince Young and Jake Locker and Marcus Mariota and all of the high picks, even Will Levis, that the Titans have had at the quarterback position. And, you know, I'll just read a brief snippet here from Kuharsky's piece, and which, again, is interesting. You can check out at PaulKuharsky.com. Says, you know, Ward isn't any of these guys. He's got far more experience entering his second year than Locker or Levis did, but he hasn't produced the level of rookie evidence that had Titans feeling so certain about Vince Young and Marcus Mariota. Titans don't need Ward to settle every question about what he'll ultimately become. But after 17 starts, they should no longer be satisfied simply by flashes that suggest what he might become either. Which I think is also where most people stand at this point. It is interesting, like as Kuharsky goes through this entire exercise, Ward is pretty different than, it's just different the way that these have all played out. But Ward is kind of on his own thing here in terms of the combination of experience, the age, he's played 17 games already. You know, Vince didn't play immediately in his rookie year. Locker didn't play immediately when he came to the organization. It's just been different paths for all these guys. But I think that last part of it sums it up. Like, you're not going to be satisfied anymore by, like, you know, a couple plays every game that show flashes. There's got to be a consistency level that starts to develop with him that we start to see on Sunday.
Yeah, no, that's a well, I think that's exactly a good way to put it, is that the flashes are no longer, ooh, well, how about that? A couple good drives here, or even a good game here and there. You got to have more than that. And it's interesting when it's an interesting framing of a story when you think about, you know, the Titans history. You know, obviously those two guys who had such promising rookie years, and again with the Mariota, then he took a big step. They took a big step year two. Probably should have won the division. And so at that point, you're like, oh, there's no question. You know, there's very little question, at least for me. You know, that's what I thought. I was like, okay, if Mariota stays on this track, like, he's going to be like a really good QB. And we know it didn't work out. Like, so that made me think of what are the best quarterbacks that we've seen in the NFL who had bad rookie seasons. Like, everybody always talks about Peyton, right?
Yeah.
which is a different time and all that stuff, and a terrible team, which is, you know, same with Cam. He threw all those picks as a rookie. But I've been trying to think of like others who like were really bad right away and then ended up being great. And I think the obvious modern time one is a guy that Brian Daboll also coached, right? Josh Allen, I'd say, was bad as a rookie. Let's see, he was, yeah, nice 52%, you know, nice 10 TDs and 12 picks.
Yeah.
Terrible. And really, I thought he was bad year two. So I guess, I mean, if you look at Josh Allen, there's a, I mean, again, he kind of just took off. I feel like, I mean, he got gradually better. I think he was definitely better in year two, but it really took off like a year three.
I mean, Jared Goff wasn't any good his rookie year.
Yep. He's a pretty good one.
Dan Fouts.
Actually, you're right. Dan Fouts did not have a good rookie year, but before he became incredible. I can't believe that Dan Fouts was a rookie in 73. But, of course, he ends up a six-time Pro Bowler, back when it meant something, four-time league passing champion, 1982 AP Offensive Player of the Year. Set the record for passing yards in a season, friend of the show, et cetera, et cetera. People don't put enough respect on his name. Aikman's another one that people talk about, but again, now we're going back to different eras, and
yeah.
Aikman was really bad early, double the picks as touchdowns at 52%, 0-11 in 1989, and then of course we know what happened with him, and he had a bad team, and just like Cam Ward. Now what you hope is, you'd love to think that Cam Ward's team around him will build like the Cowboys did around Aikman, you know, into the early 90s. But I think, you know, Josh Allen again is that guy in modern times who was just flat out bad as a rookie and turned it around. But he's an outlier, you know, and if you're an outlier, that means there aren't going to be too many more examples like you.
For sure. And, you know, Ward stepping into all this, you know, we've I think broken down just about everything there is to break down with him over the last few weeks when it comes to the preseason. But again, all it takes is stepping out there on Sunday, Joe, playing well in an actual regular season NFL game, and all the preseason stuff, I'm not saying you forget about it, but it's just not as important, right? Like if he goes out there and he struggled in OTAs and it was inconsistent in camp and the preseason games didn't go well, and he comes out there on Sunday and he throws for 300 yards and three touchdowns and the Titans win, I'm not saying that you're going to be like, you're just going to anoint him all of a sudden. But the most important data points are the NFL regular season games. And this is the first time we're going to see him under Brian Daboll with the game planning that we talked about earlier in the show. They're taking on a team that, I mean, frankly, you should move the ball against. We'll see what happens on that front. I'm just saying, like, I think, you know, I talked about how much pressure there is on him, and I think there is in this game. I also think, to a reasonable degree, it can be a little bit of a narrative changer for Cam Ward coming up on Sunday if you play well.
Oh, yeah. No, without question. I mean, it's a huge, huge day for him. And I'm sure he's excited because there is some, you know, the preseason discourse gets so annoying and old and it lasts forever. And I'm so glad we're done with it. But there is truth to the game plan thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is truth to that. There is truth to, okay, this week, here's the matchups we're going after. Like, here's, you know, okay, we're saving this play. We're going to set this play up. We're saving it. And at some point we're going to bust it out. You know, we're going to, you know, show them this look. Yep. And then we're going to, you know, all that stuff. I mean, and Brian Daboll should be good at that. And so,
and I think the interesting point to build on that, Joe, is there's truth to all that, but there's also truth when you look at it and say, yeah, I don't think his footwork is where it needs to be, right?
Right.
Like, I don't think his consistency level is where it needs to be. That's what makes it so intriguing. I have no idea what to expect from him on Sunday. None.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I still also go to, you know, if there is confidence on his part in what they're doing and what he's seeing, and there's pre-snap, if there's a big pre-snap growth from him from last year to this year, that to me makes it more likely that he's comfortable enough to set the feet and to make the throws and to do all the things you work on that unfortunately, what we saw in the preseason games is, you know, clearly some of his mechanics just kind of reverted, you know? So is he able to take that to the field in a game where it's, you know, where he maybe knows a little bit more what to expect and what he's seeing? I don't know, but that's got to help. But yeah, like, and then there's just simply like, here's a play. It's right in front of you. It's there to be made. Do you go through the proper mechanics and just deliver over and over again?
Dan Fouts catching a little bit of shade on the text line from Jackson here. It is amazing. I mean, he went from, you know, a 44.8% completion percentage in six games his rookie year. It wasn't a ton better his second year. And then all of a sudden, by about year four, things started to change a little bit for Dan Fouts. But it really wasn't until like his, I don't know, sixth or seventh year in the league where he just absolutely exploded.
Air Coryell.
Career path.
Yeah, Air Coryell, baby. Throwing to Wes Chandler, giving it to Chuck Muncy, throwing to Kellen Winslow, Gary Anderson. Oh, man, those teams were incredible. Yeah, luckily I was too young to have seen any of his crappy football. I only remember him being amazing. So don't you dare call him Dan Farts, Jackson.
Let's head back to the phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Mark in Nashville to the program. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, how you doing, Robert? Good morning. Hey, Joe, how you doing, man? Joe,
good,
you get a little personal by Dan Fouts, ain't you, Joe? I mean,
that's my guy.
A personal by Dan. Yeah. Dan Fouts was a beast, Joe. I say it all the time. Wish he'd have won a Super Bowl, like you said, Winslow, Jefferson, Joyner. You know, all those, the defense hurt them. They never had a great defense. They
yes.
had the offense to win a Super Bowl, but it was the defense that let them down. They never addressed it. But Al Coryell, one of the top three, four offensive minds ever. I mean, he's up there with Bill Walsh and all of them. He changed the passing game big time. He was a beast. But,
yes.
You know, y'all were talking about Cam and whatnot. Robert, I know I've heard you say you're not really – I don't know if you're a big fan of Cam, right or wrong. I don't know if you really wanted them to draft him. I mean, I don't think you really sold on him. Am I right about that?
That is correct.
Okay. I think he's going to be good. I just don't think it's going to be in Nashville, though, man. I think it's going to take him to go somewhere else. I wish he had a Kyle Shanahan or somebody to work with him. Or whatnot. I think he's going to be great one day. I just don't think it'll be here, like I said. I mean, when they had Vince Young here, you can say what you wanted to about Vince. He was 34 and 17 as a starter. Joe, how many times did he save Jeff Fisher's job? And Jeff Fisher never really liked the guy. He never wanted him, but he won. He was a good quarterback. Not a great passer. He turned into a good passer as time went on. But he wasn't great when he come out because he was just really known for running with the football. He had a chance to be great, but it never turned out that way. We all know how it ended. Locker and them guys was good quarterbacks, never turned into great quarterbacks. I think the thing that hurt Cam Ward, Robbie and Joe, y'all might agree, may not, I think he needed to sit a year and had a good veteran, whether it was a Tannehill or somebody in front of him. Maybe he could have learned the game from the sidelines a little more, and maybe by the time he got in there and got started to play, things would turn out better. He's got a lot of pressure on him this year, as does Salas. Cam's got to do something this year. They've got to win 7 to 8 games, I believe. Cam's got to show that he's turning the corner, he's progressing. That's why I think what I need to see from him is 25, 26 touchdowns, you know, passer, a great passer rating, percentage-wise 63-64% of his passes, and maybe close to 3,900 yards. I know that's a little outrageous.
Big step up.
Yeah, it'd be a big step up, but it ain't that he can't do it. You know, we're going to see what, because Dable has a lot of pressure to turn this guy around. I mean, you're the number one pick. You're the franchise. You're the face. You got to produce. And in the NFL, not for long. That's what it just means, not for long. And nowadays, yep. Man, organizations don't have a lot of patience with you. You got to come in and do your thing and produce like you're supposed to. But I think Robbie, I think he'll be good one day. I just don't think it's in Nashville, though. Sometimes, man, you have to go somewhere else to become better than what people thought you were. So I'm that's how I look at it with Cam. I still got faith in him. But, hey, Joe, calm down, man, okay? Get a little amped up a little bit too many times, man. Calm down, Joe. Joe, I got your back, man. I got y'all back. Don't worry about that. You'll be all right.
Thank you, Mark.
Be all right. All right. Thank y'all Mark. Have a good day, man. All right.
Appreciate
see you, Robbie.
You too, buddy. All right. Am I being too amped all today? Right. I just, you know. Well, you love Dan Fouts. There's nothing wrong with it. I love Dan Fouts, too.
A little bit too amped up about Dan Fouts. Sorry, man. You get talking about Dan Fouts, get excited.
Yep. 615-737-1025. The Vols on the road taking on Georgia Tech this weekend. What kind of a test do we think this will be for them? How will Faison Brandon respond in his first road start? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Be a hero and save a life tomorrow at the 13th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. Drive will be held at Brentwood Concord Road Library from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're going to be out there on hand from 10 a.m. to noon with swag to give away, a chance to win tickets to upcoming Preds home game as well. So make sure you keep that in mind tomorrow coming up at the 13th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. John Adams from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us here in about 10 minutes. Joe, the Vols going on the road, taking on Georgia Tech this weekend. I think they're around a 12.5-point favorite against Georgia Tech. Obviously, a very disappointing loss for the Yellow Jackets in week one against Colorado on the blocked field goal. What do you make of this test for Tennessee, Joe? Going on the road, you got true freshman coming off a nice opening week performance against Furman, and now you're on the road for the first time. Now, apparently, I think there's going to be a lot of Tennessee fans at this game. Like, Georgia Tech fans are freaking out about it, and that's not a huge surprise, but may not be like an overwhelmingly hostile environment that you're walking into, but what do you make of that?
Yeah, and I seriously wonder, like, just that result against Colorado, such a disappointment to lose that game at home. And yeah, you played a tougher team than a lot of teams did week one, and but you really kind of screwed that game up. If you look at the clock bleeding that Georgia Tech could have done, I mean, really, some of that's on Brent Key. Didn't have to lose that game. So you wonder how much that just takes the wind out of the sails of the Georgia Tech fans and opens the door for more orange in the building. I'm sure it'll be. And I've seen it before, man. I mean, I've seen Tennessee just about have half the stadium in Pittsburgh. Poor Narduzzi has a hard time sometimes in that town getting people excited about the Panthers. And actually, even that game at LSU. That was an LSU with a Heisman winner, by the way, in Jaden Daniels, but they weren't that great. And Tennessee came right in and punched him in the mouth, and they had a lot of orange. So this one in Atlanta, nice and close. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it'll minimize the hostile environment type thing. But, you know, Georgia Tech is like, they're always, I think, going to be physical. I do expect them. I know it was funny. Hypel's talking about how physical they are, and Brent Key's like, oh, did he watch the last game, or is he just being nice?
Yeah.
But, like, they'll play tough defense, and I think they will challenge Tennessee's defense with some of the stuff they do with the run game. But I'm not sure Alberto Mendoza is very good. I'm not sure he's, same last name, but I don't think we're going to be talking about some of the same stuff with him that we were talking about with Fernando.
I think Tennessee is going to win this game by 20 plus. I think they're going to be able to run the ball very well in this game. Faison, we'll see. It's an interesting test for him from the standpoint of, I mean, there's no doubt the competition level is going way up from Furman to Georgia Tech. I don't know how good Georgia Tech is, but they're certainly way better than Furman is. So, you know, there's a lot that's intriguing about it in terms of like how the quarterback is going to handle that. You got Arian Carter back in this game, which I think is a big deal for Tennessee on the defensive side of things. I just think Tennessee's talent is going to come through. I think they're going to be able to run the ball very well. I mean, look, I know Colorado ran it a lot, so it wasn't like, you know, they were just gashing Georgia Tech out there. I think they ended up running the ball like 49 times or something like that. So they ran the ball a lot. I think Tennessee is going to have 220, 230 plus yards rushing in this game, Joe. I'd be surprised if they don't. I think they're just going to run the ball all over Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, if they do, then I'm with you. Then they're going to win this game running away. You know, Georgia Tech prides itself on being physical and playing good defense. But yeah, that offense puts you in a bind. And especially, you know, Faison Brandon, it's an interesting thing because, like, you don't want him to take too many hits. You've got to think about that. You've got to certainly hope that he's going to be a really good, fast, anticipating slider out there this year.
But he can run, man.
Yeah, but he can run, and it's such a threat. And you add that to what you already have with a really good backs, good offensive line, and a scheme that just stretches a defense thin horizontally. It's problematic. So I'm very interested to see like how much that's utilized. I feel like in some of the bigger games this year against some of the best teams. I mean, I think they're going to have to use that a lot. To have a shot, you know, like in a game like against Texas and things like that. Yep. They're gonna have to be able to really use that intentionally by design to make that offense that much tougher to deal with.
John Adams will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on Tennessee and Georgia Tech, his outlook for the Vols this year. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning, talking to Vols. And to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the legendary John Adams to the program from the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, John, we were just looking ahead at the Georgia Tech game. I personally think Tennessee is going to roll in this game. There are some differing opinions on that. But when you look at the matchup for Tennessee against Georgia Tech, I guess what most stands out to you?
Well, first of all, I watched Georgia Tech against Colorado, and I was surprised at how bad Georgia Tech looked. Usually Brent Key's teams are strong at the line of scrimmage. There's a toughness to his teams. I didn't see that against Colorado. His offensive line was horrible. Georgia Tech's best offensive lineman, Ethan McKinney, he got beat for 3 sacks and had a couple of false starts. So that to me will be a problem for Georgia Tech against Tennessee on both sides of the ball, defensive and offensive lines. I thought Mendoza, Alberto Mendoza, Fernando's younger brother, making his first college start, I thought he was pretty good, but Georgia Tech couldn't get its running game going against Colorado, and that will certainly be a problem against Tennessee.
John, it's great to hear your voice, and I just have to ask you right off the jump here, how many Heisman trophies is Faison Brandon about to win?
One more than Nico Iamaleava, maybe. I changed Nico's. After a couple of games with Nico, I referred to him. What was it? Heisman Ilava or something like that, something silly. Didn't quite work out that way. But if you go back and you look at his first game in the Citrus Bowl, he was Citrus Bowl, one of those Florida Bowls against Iowa. They won 35-0. Yeah. He was MVP, ran for 3 touchdowns. Then he started out. Tennessee won its first 3 games, just rolled. He was like, I don't know, 23 of 28. Against a nobody team. But, yeah, he looked really promising. He does have a lot of athletic ability, and you've seen more of that at UCLA. But, so, yeah, I'll try to restrain myself about Faison. I do think, though, 3 things about him that stick out to me. Yeah, and it's not just how good your quarterback is. It's how good he fits a coach's system. With Josh Heupel, he needs a quarterback who can run, ideally. He needs a quarterback who can hit the deep ball and be accurate on the deep ball occasionally. And he did both of those things in the opener, again, against Furman, so it's not much competition. But he does have running ability. And even in preseason in the spring, the word was that he was pretty good on the deep ball. So those are things that are, and the other thing is The third thing is he protects the football. He didn't have a turnover against Furman. Again, consider the competition. But all those things are encouraging. He really handles himself well. The coaches talk about his maturity, and that was evident even in spring and in the summer when he stayed here in Knoxville, didn't take a vacation, didn't go home, just worked it, kept going to the team headquarters and working on his game, watching video, and tried to get better. He seems to be kind of a laid-back guy in some ways, but I think he also comprehends the seriousness of being a quarterback in the SEC. You kind of have to have that if you're going to be really good. And so those are all pluses for him. We'll just see how it unfolds.
John, on the defensive side of the ball, what's your sense for how different this group may look this year under Jim Knowles?
A good start was they could actually tackle somebody in the open field when there was open field against Furman. I mean, they were a horrendous tackling team. You need to go back no further than the Vanderbilt game. Diego Pavia made them look ridiculous. Just eluding guys, running through the secondary. I know he was a very gifted runner, but my gosh, they missed so many tackles on him. They missed enough tackles to lose three games against Vanderbilt. So that their tackling was sound in the first game. And I really think Jim Knowles, he's been saying all along that he's moved around some in his career like most coaches, but he emphasized that Tennessee had picked up his system probably quicker than in any other transition. It helps that three of the starters on defense played for him last year at Penn State, so they're familiar with the system. He brought another Penn State assistant here. So, yeah, those are good signs. But one of the questions about Tennessee was, could it rush the passer? Because it doesn't have the depth in defensive front maybe it had last season or the year before. But it had 7 sacks, 13 tackles for losses against Furman. And this Xavier Gilliam guy who transferred from Penn State, he looks like an all-SEC player. It gives you an inside rush, and he's good against the run too. 3 sacks, 5 tackles for loss. They've been saying that this guy was – they were impressed with him from the get-go, and they really needed that. So I think Tennessee is much improved on its defensive – not just on the defensive front, but overall, really. I think they're much improved on defense.
So you mentioned Jim Knowles, and obviously there's a lot of excitement about him, but do you think that – because I look at Tim Banks, and obviously it was rough last year. I mean, I think it was probably time, but he also had some really good defenses too. I mean, how much of an upgrade do you think that is from Banks to Knowles?
It's really hard to say about – I have a hard time evaluating assistant coaches sometimes and coordinators. You're right. If you go back to 2024 – and cut out a few games like that Ohio State playoff game, Tennessee's defense was really stout. I mean, it was one of the better defenses in the country that year. And then it just went belly up against Ohio State, but that was a very talented team. I thought it wasn't like Tim Banks was horrible the whole time here. And keep in mind, when he first came here, Tennessee was really going with that up-tempo offense, high speed, and throwing the ball a lot. That didn't make it easy on your defense. Heupel's tweaked his system. He's not running nearly the same tempo he once did. Tim Banks, Alex Golish hired him at Auburn as a defense coordinator, so I don't think he's horrible, but Jim Knowles has a really good track record. In 2024, when Ohio State won the national championship, he was defense coordinator. Now, it helped that he had about 3 or 4 NFL guys on his defense, but that defense was really stout.
All right, John, I have to get your thoughts on this because we know you were around Lane Kiffin. What do you make of all the Lane Kiffin stuff at LSU and earlier this week, the SEC threatening to kick him out of the league and all this stuff that's gone down with Lane Kiffin so far at LSU?
Well, I'm a native Louisianian, and I went to LSU. I was a columnist there in Baton Rouge for 5 years, so kind of know what the climate's like down there. And this, I can see why LSU fans were attracted to Lane Kiffin, and he's a terrific coach. But he's going to a place. I think Lane Kiffin always. I told my friends down there. They asked, you know, they were all curious what I thought of Lane Kiffin when LSU hired him. I said, you'll win a lot of games, but something will probably blow up at some point. And I didn't think the SEC would be considering kicking him out of the conference because Lane Kiffin was a coach. That's a bit much. And I think I was trying to think which schools will vote. Probably anybody that has to play LSU this year will vote to kick him out. I mean, would you? What they did on Clemson. But Lane Kiffin needs a guy that somebody to rein him in just a little bit and say, hey, Lane, you're pushing a little too far this time. But the climate at LSU, you got a governor who's going to be encouraging. Attaboy, go for it. We're not worried about anybody. Let the good times roll. We're not worried about anybody kicking us out of the conference. They'd be crazy to do that. So they're going to be encouraging him. So you're going to see Lane Kiffin, I think, at his best and worst at LSU.
Do you think, because I agree, obviously, we know he's a very good coach. He's a very good offensive coordinator, play caller. But he's, you know, he's had some big moments. I think about like the Ole Miss game against Florida a couple of years ago. Do you think ultimately he's going to bring LSU? He's going to pay off for LSU the way he needs to, which I guess to me means at least one national championship, if not more than one.
Oh, they definitely will want more than one. I mean,
that's true. That bar is way too low.
All right. Yeah. Okay. You got one. Now show us what you can do. That's what you're paying for. I mean, LSU's got a couple of billionaire boosters, so he's going to have more talent, I think, consistently than he's ever had. And you look at that, you look at LSU's roster right now, I'd be curious. He brought in three transfer quarterbacks, not one, but three. And I think more schools need to fortify that quarterback position. If you're going to have a quarterback who runs like Sam Leavitt does, you better have somebody behind him. And Lane Kiffin's tried to do that. So if you go back and look at Ole Miss's 24 team under Kiffin, that was his most talented team before this year. And that team somehow managed to lose to a bad Kentucky team. And ended up not even making a playoff. And I thought it probably had a roster probably as close as anybody at Ohio State that year. But I think this roster's loaded. And if LSU can manage to stay in the conference and avoid those kind of inexplicable losses along the way, it'll be in the playoffs and maybe have a chance to win a championship. But he really is a good coach, and he's really good also at assembling a roster, and it created a very competitive atmosphere. From what I've been told, those guys are making a lot of NIL money down at LSU, but he doesn't let that factor in as to who plays and who starts. You got to do it in practice and on the field. So it's a very competitive, pro-like environment, I think. So it'll be really entertaining, but does anybody really think they'll kick LSU out of the conference when they finally have a team that might could beat a Big Ten for the national championship?
No.
I don't think so.
But it's been fun. But it's been fun to watch.
Yeah. He's got just his Tiger walk coming to the game with those celebrities in tow. You know, I think that's a curiosity right there. Who will accompany Lane Kiffin on his Tiger walk into the stadium?
Well, John, you're kind with your time as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Have fun watching Tennessee and Georgia Tech this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks, John Adams, legend from the Knoxville News Sentinel with us here on the program. Joe, I think I could listen to him talk all day. I really could.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. He should do an 8-hour podcast every week. I'm demanding that from John and Gannett.
615-737-1025. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Charles Robinson at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant. Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
AJ freaking Przinski.
This is professional sports, okay?
Yes, I have an appointment open Friday afternoon. God knows I'm not writing anything for The Athletic.
Amy just was starting to really not be able to control her urges.
She does not disrobe anywhere near me.
A pineapple? I have no idea what that means.
You can date anyone's wife you'd like in this entire state, young man.
Joe liked that one. It was a layup, Joe.
I'm absolutely going Mason Rudolph over Drake May.
Drake May's probably better than Will Levis.
You want to make me mad, I'll scream at you.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe, the floor is yours.
Now you listen here, Greg Sankey, or should I say Stanky. We here in the great state of Louisiana, in the great parish of Baton Rouge, we do not take kindly to your untoward aggression, your nondiscreet malevolence as you try to take food off our table. You didn't like the cold gumbo comment? Well, as my friend John Kennedy said, you try to take us out of the SEC, we'd be on you like a hobo on a ham sandwich. Well said, John. I would add, like a street urchin on a crawfish po' boy. Like a lady of the night on a green between the ears sailor. Like a New Orleans vampire on a big vein Red Cross donor. You are lucky, sir, that you tucked your tail between your legs and went off to lose some other court case. Else the wrath of the tiger made you wish you never left the Southland Conference for this arena where the big boys play. And weren't you some kind of compliance director at Northwestern State, Natchitoches, in the 1980s? You try this again, and you will comply with the business end of my Arcadian leather alligator skin boots, my friend. And you better damn well believe Lane Kiffin alone. That is our coach. He's not perfect. I have not loved everything. Letting Clemson score is a problem. I think he should have gone after 10 NFL guys, not just two. He did not rename his defensive coordinator the coordinator of war, as I suggested. He did not take a literal pound of flesh from Dabo, as I desired, after we thoroughly pummeled the fake Tigers from their fake Death Valley on Saturday night. But he is a special boy with special powers. He is a leader of men. And if you don't believe me, I'd like you to listen to what an incredible orator he is. Everyone in our gold-plated locker room heard these special words at halftime of the Clemson clubbing. I said we heard these special words at halftime of the Clemson clubbing.
Oh, is that my cue?
That is your cue.
All right, guys, we started here like 7-8 months ago, whatever it was, all right? And we asked you to work really hard, okay? And we asked you to come back to work again and again and again, okay? Do you feel good about what happened?
I don't know.
Who gives a f*** what happened? That's what's supposed to happen. Ain't no f***ing celebrations for that. They're f***ing soft. They work different. We're f***ing different. So you got to show them again. They're going to come out. Doesn't matter what plays they run. Doesn't matter what they do on offense, defense. Put the next f***ing quarterback in. I don't give a f***. You send them a f***ing message. Who the f*** is on their schedule? They have to play you. And don't think we letting up late. No matter if you're in the game for one snap or 50 more snaps, you f***ing take it out on them. The whole world hates you. So you get a chance to show the whole world. Go f*** yourself. Clifton doesn't have to see it right now. Team on three, 1, 2, 3. Team.
Now, did you hear how he went from almost bizarre screams of profanity to 1, 2, 3 team? Now, that is special, my friend. Who's going to say no to that legend, that leader, that ball coach, that strong, powerful, eloquent family man and man of faith? Very hard to say no to that man. Now, Greg Sankey, you are wrong, though, when we say we have no control. We set limits. Yes, I gave him use of my private jet, a percentage of my stock holdings. He's free to dip into the general fund of the great state of Louisiana when the time comes to outspend Alabama, Ohio State, or even those new money rascals, those rapacious rapscallions at Texas Tech for a quarterback in the portal. I gave him a key to every city in the state. But I did not, as he requested, give him a key to the LSU chapter of Kappa Kappa Gamma. I thought he should probably just introduce himself during the daytime to set up the charity fundraiser he hopes to coordinate with those fine students. And I also said the general fund may be fine for NIL, but while I could not quite part with $10 million for the hot yoga studio he hopes to add to our athletic complex. So as you see, we have control. What you will not control is the ferocity, the intensity, the barbarity, the savagery of the 12 tail whippings that Lane and his team are about to administer before they go make the college football playoff their personal playland. The college football playoff will be a casual, lazy, half-drunken afternoon on the It's a Small World ride at Disneyland. We'll raise a crystal ball, and they will do it again and again, and Will Wade will take us to the promised land if he has to put LSU uniforms on an entire Czech Republic professional team to do it. And Kim Mulkey has more championships than her, even as she branches out and becomes an ambassador of sorts, finding players on different sides of wars and forcing them to run pick and rolls with each other. We are inevitable, as is your place in history, Greg Sankey, as a yellow-bellied, traitorous denier of all that is right and good in the world.
Ian, you got any clue as to what just happened?
No, I do not.
That's what makes it so beautiful. Joe, I'm impressed you held that together the whole time. That was good stuff.
I mean, I heard you laughing, and I mean, I nearly lost it in the first half, man. I was just trying not to look at you, you know, trying not to look at you. And I hope that now, like, maybe we can put this character to bed.
Nope. I think it's just getting started, to be honest with you.
I mean, I gave you a lot there. He might need to take a little break, okay?
I think the best part of that entire thing was Ian. Is this my cue? It could not have been better. Ian, well done.
Thank you, LSU. Joe.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you all around. We love LSU and the SEC. They give us so much joy.
I really hope Charles Robinson heard that.
Me too.
There are people thinking that you deserve an Oscar or whatever the radio version of an Oscar is. Key says you deserve an Oscar, an Emmy, a Grammy, and a Tony for that performance. Really only like one person so far doesn't like it, but that's really good stuff from Joe Rexroad there. Did not expect it to go that way.
Yeah, I got a WTF LOL, which is fine too. I expect some of that.
Charles Robinson from NFL Blue Book will be with us coming up next. I don't know how we just top what happened there, but we'll try. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. I just love the fall season. Crisp mornings, pumpkin spice latte, and it's the best time to cozy up and play Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 different slots in all my favorite casino style games. And they're running a deal for all new players, a $30 coin package for just 10 bucks. So this fall, grab your favorite blanket, visit spinquest.com and download the app today.
Spin Quest is a free to play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.